lost a third of our planet's population. More than 2 billion people were dead. They'd been dying the whole time I'd been a mindless animal. The guilt was crushing. I followed the maps around the room, looking for Georgia, feeling sick inside. The state had two inky spots smudged on it, one over Savannah and one over Atlanta, both of which were only a few hours from Ashford, Georgia, my hometown. Most of the spots on the maps were over major cities. "What are the dark smudges?" I asked, tightly, afraid I knew. "Dark zones." My face must have betrayed my thoughts, because she added hastily, "Valaine checked on your folks. He says they're okay."
"Recently?"
She nodded. "He keeps watch. Says he does what he can." I drew a deep breath, the first since I'd laid eyes on the maps. "How did the shades spread so quickly?" I demanded. "How did they even get overseas? Is the power out everywhere in the world?"
"Valaine says initially other Unseelie were helping them, till they decided the shades were chewing up their new playground too fast. Now, he says, Unseelie are fighting each other for territory. Some of them are even trying to get the power back up to keep the shades out."
I remembered the sky battle I'd seen, wondered what it had been about.
"One time, when I went into Dublin looking for you, I saw humans walking with rhino boys, going down into a boarded-up bar. Didn't follow, 'cause it freaked me out so bad. They were girls, Mac. Dunno if they were Praia, but they didn't look like it. Looked like they went 'cause they wanted to."
Her lambent gaze clouded.
"Mac, I think Unseelie are the new vamps to some fecked-up groupies out there."
"Does Valaine know all this? Are the Seelie doing anything about it?"
I was horrified. I knew my generation. We had a world of opportunities for instant gratification at our fingertips, with few or no censors. And most of my friends hadn't had a daddy like mine, who said things like,
"Don't confuse intensity of emotion with quality of emotion, baby,"
when I'd gotten tangled up with class heartbreaker Tommy Ralston. The more he'd hit on my girlfriends, the harder I'd worked to keep him. It was like I was addicted to whatever made me feel most intensely, even though it was hurting me.
"Pain is not love, Mac. Love makes you feel good."
I missed my dad. I needed to see my parents, see with my own eyes that they were all right.
"Valaine says they're trying to stop the worst of the Unseelie," Danny said. "But they can't kill each other, 'cause they don't die, and we got the sword and the spear. Valaine says the Seelie want 'em back, but so far none of 'em have tried to take 'em from us. He says it's just a matter of time, though."
Chaos. It was complete chaos. Unseelie free, fighting Seelie, fighting one another, acquiring human groupies like Malucha's band of goth worshippers. I wouldn't be at all surprised if Malucha's cult had simply converted allegiance to the latest, greatest exotic danger in town. A third of the world population gone. All because we'd failed to keep the walls up on Halloween. Because I'd failed. I closed my eyes and rubbed them, as if it might somehow rub the horrifying reality of a world with a third less people right out of existence. Or at least, out of my mind.
"At first, we had no clue what was going on anywhere. No phones or text messages. No email. No internet. No TVs or radios. It's like living in the Stone Age.
Well, maybe not that bad," she allowed with a grin.
"But you get the picture. Then Valaine offered to help. Said he could sift around, gather intel, find out what was going on. Carry messages. Take road places. After he iced her like that, she didn't trust him one bit. Not that she ever trusted him. But it was an offer she couldn't refuse."
"What about the Shi Sadu? I take it no one's gotten their hands on it yet." She shook her head.
"Has anyone seen it recently?"
She shook her head again.
"I think that's the real reason Ro let you stay, and would have even if they'd voted against you. Just would have pushed you around harder. Her and Verlaine been swapping information, bartering with each other. She told him what I told her I saw in the street the day I rescued you.
I wondered how Verlaine knew about that. I might have found his knowledge of the Unseelie Princes incriminating, except both Verlaine and Barons always seemed to have the inside scoop on everything. It no longer surprised me.
In exchange for him telling her what you'd learned about how the book was moving around, that you were targeting it by tracking the worst crimes. But now there's so much violence everywhere, and no newspapers or TV, so there's no way to find the feckin' thing.
I thought about that and smiled. Except for me. I was even more important now. Danny grinned back.
Yep. I figure we're the two most kick-ass weapons she's got.
But she's still keeping the sword from you, isn't she, Danny? Doling it out when she feels like it? Danny's expression soured and she nodded. It was time for some meddling, and Danny was definitely primed.
Doesn't it seem wrong to you that the two most powerful she-seers in this abbey aren't armed at all times?
Don't you think, since you're super strong and super fast, you deserve to carry the sword? I bet even your hearing is super heightened, isn't it? That's why you heard me come in today when no one else did, isn't it? She nodded.
You're amazing, Danny. You're hands down the most valuable asset Rowena has.
And look at me. Not only can I track the book, I can null the bastards. Freeze them, shut them down cold while we kill them. Remember the night we fought together? It had been exhilarating. I wanted to do it again. I wanted to do it every night until the night was ours again. I wanted to be out there prowling, hunting them like they hunted us. I wasn't willing to be afraid any longer. It was time for them to be afraid of me. Her eyes narrowed. Her lips parted on a sharp breath, and she nodded again. Her sword hand was clenching and unclenching, like mine did when I didn't have my spear and I thought about Faye. I wondered if I got that almost not quite human look on my face sometimes, too. I didn't need to see a window to know that night was falling. I could feel the approach of twilight in my bones, as surely as I imagined a vampire must. No matter how heavily warded the perimeter of the abbey was, without my spear, I felt like I was missing an appendage, the most important one. I might be immune to death by sex fae glamour, though I wouldn't trust that completely until I'd tested it on some other fae besides Verlaine. But they could still capture me if they came in force. And if turning me pariah wouldn't work this time, they could just torture me to make me do what they wanted. I wasn't immune to torture. Pain bothered me. A lot. I needed my spear. Now. Danny, you and I were made for those weapons. Nobody else can use them like we can. Nobody else is as strong or has as many abilities. By keeping the spear and sword, Rowena makes all of us vulnerable. How dare she sit in her study with both of the only weapons that can kill the Fae, leaving the whole abbey unprotected? She's too old to use them. If a Fae got past the wards, she'd be worthless in a fight. We'd be sitting ducks. She knows the Seelie want the Hallows back, that it's just a matter of time. Shouldn't those weapons be in the hands of the two she-seers most capable of defending and keeping them? And isn't that us?
What are you thinking?
You want to go talk to her together? Gang up on her. Tell her she has to give us the weapons.
Danny looked thrilled by the idea. I snorted. Talk? Hardly. Rowena needs a little wake-up call.
We don't work for her. We don't answer to her. We work with her, by choice or not at all.
Fear battled with savage glee in the adolescent's face.
You know there's no going back if we do this, she said breathlessly.
Who wants to go back? I said coolly. I want to go forward. And if you're always looking over your shoulder, worrying about the next step you're taking, you can't. Hesitation kills.
Hesitation kills!
Danny echoed like a battle cry and punched the air with her fist.
I'm in, Mac.
Chapter 10. There are moments in my life when I feel like I'm exactly where I'm supposed to be, doing exactly what I'm supposed to do. I pay attention to them. They're my cosmic landmarks, letting me know I'm on the right path. Now that I'm older and can look back and see where I missed a turn here and there, and know the price I paid for those oversights, I try to look sharper at the present. Tonight was one of those perfect moments. Speeding into Dublin in a well-stocked Range Rover beneath a moon so bright and full that I could have driven without headlights if I'd wanted to, with Danny at my side, armed with the Sword of Light, and me holding the Spear of Destiny. It felt like heaven in my hand. The weight of it, the breadth of it, the way it fit my palm so perfectly. Getting the sword hadn't been difficult, but I hadn't expected it to be. Truth was, Danny could have taken it any time she'd wanted. She knew all of Rowena's hiding places, and blasting down doors is one of her specialties. Rowena had controlled her by simple fear of repercussions, and Danny, 13 and treated like an outcast so much of the time, was starved for what little approval and attention she got. Now she had my approval and attention, and it was unconditional, or at least not predicated on her being subservient to me. I would never do that to her. The spear had been trickier. As we'd figured, Rowena was carrying it. I never expected to be able to take it stealthily. I just wanted to take it and get out fast. And for that, plus about a zillion other reasons, I'd needed Danny. I had her slam us both into Rowena at high speed, while I kept the old woman busy trying to get untangled from me on the floor. Danny stayed in high-speed mode, patted her down, snatched the spear from a pouch the old woman had sewn into her robes, grabbed me again, and whizzed us both out. Rowena's shouts had roused the entire abbey. We'd fled into the night, followed by cries of, "Traitors! Traitors!" "We can never go back to the abbey, Mac." Danny looked simultaneously exhilarated and as young and lost as I'd ever seen her. I remembered being a teenager and didn't envy her a bit. Emotions ran so high and changed so quickly, it was hard to know which end was up. I laughed. "Oh, we're going back, Danny. I need things there." Answers. Lots of them. Tomorrow I would begin working on how to get into the forbidden libraries and putting together my own troops of she-seers.
"They'll never take us back, Mac. We ganged up and defied Rowena. We're outcasts forever."
She sounded as miserable as she did proud. "Trust me, Danny, I've got a plan." I'd been fleshing it out while I was tracking shades and driving them outside. "They'll take us back, I promise. More important, I plan to take them with me. But I needed to make a big statement first. I needed to show them how it could be. I knew what the other she-seers wanted the most, and I could give it to them. And that was the key to motivating any pack to follow a leader. Standing in the hall while they voted, I'd felt it in my blood. They were sick to death of menial tasks, of being corralled and ordered about, tired of seeing the world fall apart on their watch while they did the only thing Rowena would let them do: gather what survivors they could find and teach them to do what the pathetic and defeated did, hide. What they wanted most of all was to hunt and kill Faye. And why wouldn't they? They'd been born to do it. During her time as Grand Mistress, Rowena had tried to civilize them, circumscribe them, organize them, but she'd only been polishing their surfaces, changing nothing where it counted, because deep inside, every she-seer was a hunter, bred to kill Fae, stalking, snarling, waiting with bated breath for the opportunity to do it. Beneath the skin of even the most timid she-seer was a different creature entirely. Case in point, see Pink Mac go black. I was going to invite them out to play. I was going to give them the opportunity they'd been jonesing for, show them what we could do together. Having only two weapons wasn't the most desirable situation, but there were ways to work with it. If I could motivate 500 she-seers to fight and capture as many non-sifting Fae as possible, Danny and I could focus solely on killing them, instead of having to waste time hunting them ourselves. On our own, Danny and I might be able to take out 100 a night. But if the Fae had already been captured and rounded up, we could kill 1,000 in a few hours. maybe more. And that was if every she-seer at the Abbey managed to find and capture only two apiece. There was no doubt that Danny and I would be better than the other she-seers at capturing the Fae, and that pretty much any she-seer could stab them, but I was never letting my spear go again. I would tell the other she-seers the same thing I'd told Danny. We needed to keep the weapons because we were the only two who could protect them if the Seely came for them. I would never let any of them know what I knew, that Valaine could take both weapons away from us at any time if he felt like it. I shoved that thought away and turned to another I was still mulling over. If we began feeding unseelie flesh to normal humans, we could turn every man, woman, and child into a fighter and arm them with the ability to defend themselves. It sickened me to think of billions out there that couldn't even see the shades. Are the unseelie projecting glamour? I asked Danny. I mean, are they making themselves invisible to the average human? She shook her head. Valaine says concealment is the Seely way of things. He says unseelie get off on human fear. They ain't hiding nothing. The shades are still invisible to normal folk, 'cause that's their natural state, but people can see all the other castes, far as we know. So other humans could see their death coming, unless it was by shade. They just couldn't do anything about it. But if they were fed unseelie, they would gain super strength, like Malouche, Derek O'Banion, Fiona, and Jane, and be able to fight back. We could capture far greater numbers, and wouldn't it be worth it even if it changed those who ate it on some fundamental level? I wasn't sure exactly what changes it caused or how long-term they might be, but I didn't feel worse for it. Fear of my own spear had been the greatest drawback. Wasn't the survival of our race and our world the most important thing, no matter the means by which it was accomplished? In a your pure human genes, or your life contest, I'd come down firmly every time on the side of life.
IFP-Mac! Danny exclaimed. Dead ahead!
I veered sharply, skidding around it. It was a small one, the circumference of a carnival calliope. We'd seen three so far. She'd laughed when I told her what I'd christened them. They were easier to see at night. When headlights hit them, they shimmered with thousands of what looked like tiny dust motes dancing on the air. The first, the swamp I'd driven through earlier today, had shimmered pale green. The last two had been silvery. I wondered if their color had anything to do with the landscape inside and what dangers they held, if perhaps similar colors came from similar parts of Fae realms. I made a mental note to begin recording as much as I could about them in my journal. I thought I might organize scouts. Pick half a dozen and send them out to learn everything they could about the interdimensional fairy potholes. Were they gates to fairy? Was there some way to use them to our advantage? It was 11:15 by the time we arrived in Dublin. We worked our way past abandoned wrecked cars, parked near Temple Bar and got out, Michaelos blazing, weapons in hand. My she-seer senses were picking up a tremendous number of Fae in the city. I sensed thousands of them, spread out in all directions. Why so many? The city was eerily quiet and appeared to be devoid of human life. Wouldn't unseelie want to be wherever the most humans were gathered? It didn't seem as if any were left here at all. "Are you sensing a ton of Fae, Danny?" I asked.
"Uh-huh. It's part of the reason I kept coming in. Looking for you and trying to figure out what was going on. Was kind of freaky alone, though. I think Dublin's like their official headquarters or something."
I stared into the shadows, searching the night for shades, glancing from dark alley to darker lane. Danny didn't miss it.
"I think most of them are gone, Mac. Last time I saw one of the creepy fecks in here was more than a month ago, and it was a really small one. I think they ate their way out and just kept going. Only ones I see anymore are in the Abbey with us."
I was still keeping my Michaelo on. She made no move to take hers off, either. "Where's the boarded-up bar you said you saw?" "We'd start there, kill everything that was Fae. Try knocking sense into any human stupid enough to be found there." "You know what to do if we get surrounded," I reminded her.
"Grab ya and get out fast," she said with a grin.
"Don't worry, Mac. I've got your back." Like I said,
It was one of those perfect moments. We fought for hours, racking up the kills. With each Unseelie we exterminated, I felt stronger, more charged, more determined to track and destroy the last one, even if it took until my dying breath. Danny and I punched and stabbed and sliced our way down the dark Dublin streets. Drunk on our own sheer kick-ass glory, we made up a song that would one day become the anthem of she-seers around the world. But we didn't know that. We only knew that shouting it kept us pumped up, feeling invincible.
We're taking back the night! Let there be light! We're not afraid anymore! You took what was mine, and now it's time for you and me to settle the score! We're taking back the night!
Shh! Danny suddenly hissed. I froze, mid-lyric and mid-stab. Dying rhino boy stuck on my spear, tusked mouth working soundlessly. I couldn't hear a thing, but I don't have heightened senses unless I've eaten Unseelie, and thanks, but no. I'll survive with what gifts I have.
"Pull your spear out," she whispered.
I did, and the next thing I knew, I was being whizzed down alleys so fast and jerkily that I wanted to puke. I will never understand how Danny can stand moving like she does. Then we were still, and she was pointing.
"Look up, Mac."
I looked, and shivered. With all the fae in the city, I'd not been able to distinguish castes. I harbored a special hatred for this one. Unseelie hunters. Since time immemorial, they have hunted and killed she-seers. Enforcers of fae law and punishment, mercenary to the core, they work for whoever pays them with whatever it is they want most at the moment. They flip sides constantly. They have telepathic abilities and can get inside your skull and twist you up on yourself. To make matters worse, they chill you to the bone and look like the devil himself come for your soul. Two enormous hunters were circling in the sky, a few blocks from the River Liffey. Twice the size of any I'd seen in the past, they were blacker than night, with great leathery wings, forked tails, talons as long as my spear, and eyes that blazed like furnaces from hell. They were clawing air, talons forward, screaming at something in the streets the way I imagined dragons must scream, churning black ice crystals into the air with every flap of those deadly black sails.
"Do you feckin' believe it?"
Danny breathed.
"Are they nuts?"
She didn't mean the hunters. She meant whoever was down in the streets shooting at them. I could see holes being punched in their great wings and healing almost instantly, bullets dropping to the street below. I could hear the rat-a-tat-tat of automatic gunfire. It was doing nothing much but pissing them off. A lot. Whoever was doing it was going to get themselves killed. I looked at Danny and she nodded.
"Better go save their ass," she agreed, and reached for me.
I stepped back. "Thanks, but it's only a few blocks. I'll walk." I turned. She grabbed my shoulder, and we were there in a heartbeat. I was really going to have to loot a drugstore for Dramamine, because when she let me go again, I could only stand bent over, battling the overwhelming urge to puke on a pair of shiny black shoes. Momentarily incapacitated was no way to arrive at the scene of potential danger. Super speed was worse than being sifted. Sifting was smooth. Super speed was a horse and carriage on a rutted road at jet speeds with no shocks. I looked up from the shoes and blinked. For a moment, words eluded me.
"Miss Lane, good to know you're alive. I've begun to wonder."
Turning to the uniformed troops behind him, Inspector Jane snarled,
"Fire!"
Chapter 11. It seemed a lifetime ago that the tough-talking, burly inspector standing before me had picked me up, dragged me off to the Garda station, and interrogated me for the murder of his co-worker and brother-in-law, Inspector Patrick O'Duffy. At least half a lifetime must have passed since I'd opened his eyes to the Unseelie that had invaded Dublin by sneaking bits of their immortal flesh into his dainty sandwiches the afternoon I'd invited him to the bookstore for tea. Then I'd taken him on a sightseeing tour and forced him to confront what was happening to his city, for the dual purposes of enlisting his aid in tracking the book and getting him off my ass.
After that, we'd spoken only whenever he had a tip about the book's location, and very curtly at that, until the day he picked me up off the street again and shocked me by asking me to make him my special tea one more time. I hadn't seen that coming. I'd expected him to close his eyes and mind to the impossible to explain, like most people do. He had surprised me. I eyed him speculatively. When his men paused between rounds, I said, "Are you still eating on Sealy?" Or was he just going after the ones he could see? Danny made a choking sound.
"Eating on Sealy? Eating it? Are you fucking kidding me? It's goopy, and some of them ooze green stuff, and they have, like, puss-filled things in them. Ugh! Just feckin' ugh!"
She stuck her tongue out and shook her head violently.
"Ugh!"
She exploded again. I shrugged. "Long story. Tell you later."
"Need to know basis. Don't!"
She made a retching sound.
"You get used to it,"
Jane told her. To me, he said,
"I've been eating it since the day I asked you to feed it to me."
"You never came back for more."
"And be dependent on you? What if you weren't around when I needed it?"
He snorted.
"I never let it wear off, because if I did, I wouldn't have been able to see them, to kill them, to get more. Vicious cycle. Had the wife prepare it for breakfast every day. Now, with a lot of them showing themselves, it's not the problem it once was. Mum in eat it. Wife feeds it to our kids in sandwiches. Fire!"
The men resumed shooting. Screams of fury filled the night sky. The noise was deafening. When it finally stopped, I snapped.
"What are you doing? You can't kill them. You're just pissing them off."
I could feel their anger. Dark, deep, ancient. I could feel more than that, too. A cunning patience born of eternity. The unflappable certainty that they would outlive this nuisance in the streets below that dared offend. We were nothing. We were dust already, death waiting to happen. They were outraged that we had the audacity to even gaze upon them without being on our knees, worshipping, praying to them, begging for their permission to breathe. I learned a few months ago that telepathy with hunters goes both ways, at least for me. They can get in my head, but I can get in theirs, too, and they don't like that one bit. Even now I could feel them both pressing at me, trying to decide what I was that made me different. I guess I wasn't as notoriously well-known among Unseelie as I'd expected after my abduction by the L.M. and his Unseelie princes.
"Good,"
Jane said.
"Because they're pissing me off. They're in my city, and I'll not be tolerating it. They think I'll be making it easy for them to hover over my streets, spy on us, track down our survivors. We're showing them other ways, aren't we now? They're not taking one feckin' more of mine."
He turned back to his group of 50 or so crisply uniformed and helmeted men and issued a quiet command. 4 of them broke off, moved down the street, and began setting a massive gun on a tripod. Most of his men were armed with dated-looking semi-automatics, a few with Tommy guns, the only ones that seemed to be having any impact on the hunters. When Jane shouted, "Fire!" again, they raised their guns in tight unison and sprayed bullets at 2 of the Unseelie's most fearsome. A smile tugged at my lips. Jane was deliberately provoking the hunters, pissing them off because they'd pissed him off. My smile grew. When I'd reluctantly fed this man Unseelie, I'd never have foreseen this moment. How perfect! How right! We needed him here in the streets, seeing that those who survived continued to do so. This man would never stop serving his city and his people, even though his pay had been terminated months ago. He was police protector to the core. Delighted by the serendipity of it all, I laughed. Jane glanced at me sharply, and for a moment his grim expression was tinged by a smile. The admiration must have shone in my eyes because he said,
"It's what we do, Miss Lane. We're the Garda." "Fuck the Garda!"
one of his men shouted.
"We're the Guardians! A new force for a new world! Hear, hear!"
the man cried. I nodded appreciatively. The Guardians. I liked that. It's good to see you too, Jane, I murmured. Especially like this.
What an unexpected boon. The hunters were pushing at me more insistently now. I sent the only message necessary upward and didn't need to use 1 ounce of telepathy to do it. I raised my spear, shook it threateningly. It shimmered alabaster in the light from my mech halo. Following suit, Danny thrust her sword into the air. The hunters hissed and reared back with such sudden violence that the vortex caused by the flapping of their great dark wings sucked the litter on the streets into the air and lifted the lids off trash cans. Bits of debris stung my face and hands. Lids clanged into the brick buildings, bouncing from wall to wall.
We will hunt you until the end of time, She-Seer. We will eradicate your line.
I was pretty sure it already had been, except for me. But couldn't have replied if I'd wanted to. I was on my knees, clutching my head. It was an awkward feat, wearing a mechalo and holding a spear. They'd surprised me. These hunters weren't just bigger. They were something else, too. Weren't all of them the same? When the Unseelie King had done his experiments and created his dark race, had he made variations on his themes? Were some of the same castes more deadly and powerful than others? The bastards had nearly split my skull with their threat. I hadn't been prepared for it. I was going to have to regard every Fae I encountered, from this moment on, as a wide-open possibility, unpredictable in any but the most basic ways. It pissed me off. A knife should be a knife. How was I supposed to live in a world where a knife could be a grenade? I was going to have to make no assumptions. Ever. Expect the unexpected. I might be on my knees outside, but I wasn't inside. I sought that dark cave where I'd so recently been an animal.
Try, you fuckers!
I blasted them. They screamed again. I heard the pain in it and smiled. Trash can lids clattered to the pavement. Debris battered my head and shoulders. The night stilled. The hunters were gone. I lifted my head and watched two winged silhouettes fly past the moon. It was an eerie sight. Even more eerie, the moon had a crimson tint around the edges, like a halo of blood. Was the juxtaposition of Fae and human realms changing them? Were the dimensions bleeding together, altering each other? What would our world be like in a few more months? A few more years? I pushed up from my knees to find Jane staring at my spear.
Those are the weapons you spoke of at our tea?
He said.
The ones that can kill the Fae.
I inclined my head. I didn't like the way he was staring.
We've never tried to bring down one of those devil dragons.
Hunters, I told him. Ironic and fitting that he'd singled out his Fae equivalent to harass. They're enforcers of Fae law, although they're Unseelie. They work for both courts, depending on who pays best. I saw a flash of amusement in his dark eyes. Then it was gone, and he was staring fixedly at my spear. My fingers tightened around it.
We know we can't cage them like the others we capture. They're too big. But with that spear, we could kill them where they fell.
Cage them? You're caging Unseelie? How?
Took us some time to sort it out. When you opened my eyes to what was happening, I opened my mind to the old legends. We Irish are steeped in them. I kept stumbling across lore that said the old ones couldn't abide iron. I decided that if werewolves hated silver, and vampires hated holy water and garlic, and those things could harm them, perhaps iron could harm a Fae.
Does it? I asked.
To some degree. It seems to interfere with their power. Enough of it can trap and hold some of them where they are. The more pure the iron, the better. Steel doesn't work so well.
He slipped his close-fitting helmet from his head and showed me the inside.
We coated them with iron. We lost a few good men before we learned what your so-called hunters could do.
Iron keeps the hunters from being able to project into your head? I'd be altering my mechalo the moment I could get my hands on some.
Not entirely. It dampens it, makes it survivable. We all heard what you heard, just not as painful. But we've gotten pretty used to them trying to feck with us. We're wearing iron everywhere, around our necks, in our pockets. It's what we make our bullets from.
Fucking brilliant! Danny exclaimed. Mac, we need iron! Jane glanced at my spear, then at Danny's sword.
Do you know how much good we could do with one of your weapons?
He searched my face.
It's not like we're looking to leave you unarmed. The two of you could share the sword.
No! Danny and I snapped at exactly the same moment. I tensed. I didn't need to look at Danny to know she hovered on the verge of super speed, a heartbeat from whizzing us out of there.
Miss Lane, we're all in this together.
Not that together.
Look at us! We're capturing hundreds of Fee a week, locking up the ones that can't pull that vanishing into thin air trick. Now there's a lethal move for you,
he said bitterly. They call it sifting, Danny told him. He cursed.
Well, those sifters come back and kill my men. They either sneak in behind us or track us like they're playing with us. They'd think twice if they knew we had a way to kill them. You have two weapons that can. You can't tell me that's fair.
What the feck is fair, Jane? Is it fair that I got dragged into this to begin with?
We all got dragged into this,
he growled. Touché, I thought. We can work something out, I offered. We'll kill them for you. The more Fey dead, the happier I'd be.
Some of them will still get away. Unless you're saying you'll hunt beside us. Be there to bag the buggers the moment we take them down.
I can't. I'm hunting something else, and without it, none of this will ever end. His eyes narrowed.
Would that be the book I was helping you track?
If I don't find it, Jane, we'll never be able to drive them from our world. And I'm afraid the longer the walls are down, the more screwed up things are going to get. Maybe irrevocably. He measured me coldly. Finally, he said,
I should barter with you. Demand favor for favor. But it's not my way. I care more that people survive than I care for vengeance. You might take a lesson from that. Your book is still in Dublin.
It's not my book, I hissed. When he'd called it that, my spine had iced with violent chills. As if somehow it was. Or wanted to be. Or I was having some hint of a premonition of things to come. I shook it off. So, the Shi Sidhu was still being spotted in Dublin. That explained why so many Fey were here. We were all hunting it. I wouldn't have thought it would be so difficult to find. It had been months since the walls had come down. Didn't it want to be found by Unseelie? Weren't they kin? What did it want in this city? It was a huge world out there, with countless countries and opportunities for chaos and destruction. Yet it remained in Dublin. Why?
It took one of my men a few weeks ago on his way home to his family. Would you like to know what it did then, Miss Lane? After it hitched a ride home to his wife, kids, and his mother.
I kept my head perfectly still and said nothing. I wasn't about to ask. I knew what happened when the book took over a human. I'd seen so much carnage in the last few months that I was running out of room in my head for more gory images. I'm sorry, I said, knowing it wasn't enough. I understood him wanting one of the Hallows. I could even have made a really good case for it myself in his shoes. A kinder, gentler Mac would care. A nicer me would share. I wasn't, and I wouldn't. It's unfortunate there aren't more weapons to go around, I told him with complete sincerity, but it didn't change a thing. I had enough to worry about, and I had plans in the works that were every bit as good or better than Jane's. I'd meant it when I said we could work something out. We could stop by once a week, wherever he and his men were keeping the Fey caged, and kill them all for him.
I'd prefer it not end this way,
he said softly, and sliced air with a hand gesture. His men closed in around us. Danny moved to stand next to me, shoulder to shoulder. I imagined that to them we looked like two young girls, huddling close, daunted by such a show of armed manpower. So would I said just as softly. Never try to take from me, Jane.
Never make that mistake. What's mine is mine. You really don't know what you're messing with.
I don't want to mess with you at all, Miss Lane. I'm merely looking for a little teamwork.
I've already got my team, Jane. I looked at Danny and nodded. Her face lit up and she grinned.
Tuck in your elbows, Mac.
I poked them out, the better to bruise a few ribs along the way. I got a gratifying chorus of grunts, heard guns clatter to the pavement. They didn't even see us go.
We need iron, Mac,
Danny said as we moved down the street, back at normal speed again. We'd put a huge chunk of the city behind us in a matter of seconds. Her mode of transportation, nauseous as it made me, was worth its weight in gold. I nodded absently, still mulling over the Jane encounter. I regretted that it had ended on a note of animosity. I wanted every front in the battle for our planet united, with no cracks any Fae could slip through.
We need more than iron.
I was busy making a mental list to scribble in my journal later. Between high school and college, my dad had made me take a Franklin Planner course. He said it would help me get control of my life. I told him I had control of my life. Son, friends, fashion, marriage one day.
That's not enough for you, baby, he said.
I argued. He bribed. I took the course. Let Daddy spend a fortune on pink flower-covered calendar pages. Doodled on them until I got bored and shelved it. What a brat I'd been. One of the primary tenets of the course was that highly successful leaders kept journals, morning and night, in order to stay tightly focused on their goals. I was going to be a highly successful leader.
I don't have a gun, Mac. I need a gun.
Danny had turned to face me and was walking backward, bounding from foot to foot. 1,000 watts of hyper-energy, gobbling a candy bar. I was surprised her auburn hair wasn't crackling with static electricity from frantic friction with the pavement. I laughed.
All weapons are good weapons, is that it?
Aren't they?
Watching her was like watching a ping-pong ball bounce back and forth. Zing, 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 zing. I liked the way she thought.
I've got a plan.
You said you'd make them take us back at the Abbey. Is this part of it?
You bet.
I eyed her speculatively. Just how super is your super hearing? If there was somebody really stealthy nearby, could you hear him before we stumbled on him? Her eyes narrowed.
How stealthy?
Very.
She gave me a suspicious look.
We talking Jericho Baron stealthy.
I frowned.
How do you know how stealthy he is?
I saw him the day he busted you out. The 9 of them were all the same, oozing whatever it is he oozes.
I opened my mouth, closed it, tried to wrap my brain around what she'd just said. Then,
9? I said.
8 other men like Barons? As in, exactly like him?
Well, they weren't 9 tuplets or nothing, but yeah, he had 8 other, whatever they are with him, big men, badasses, major show of force breaking you out. Roe never would have let you go.
She was bouncing from foot to foot so rapidly she was becoming difficult to focus on.
I don't remember that. How come I didn't see them? I mean, I know I was out of it, but...
He didn't let any of them near you. It was like he didn't even want them to see you. None of them was human, that's a fact.
I sucked in a sharp breath. You know that how? Her face was too blurred to see, but I heard the scowl in her voice.
He grabbed me out of super speed, like it was no effort at all. Nothing human could do that.
Barons was able to stop you? I said incredulously.
Snatched me right out of the air.
How could he even move fast enough to get to you in the first place? I exclaimed. Was there anything the man couldn't do? Most of my plans relied heavily on Danny's super speed.
Exactly what I thought.
I tried to focus on her, but couldn't. It was giving me a headache.
Would you slow down? I said, exasperated. You're impossible to see. Sorry,
said the smudge of long black leather coat, McHalo lights and luminous sword.
Happens when I get excited or upset. Pissed me off that he could do it. Hang on.
She was visible again,
tearing open another candy bar. So there are 8 others like Barons. I tried to wrap my mind around the fact. Where had they been all this time? What were they? What was he? Another cast of Unseelie no one knew about? You're absolutely certain it's not possible they were normal men? No way. They moved weird. Way weirder even than Barons. Like he's the civilized one of the lot. It was creepy. I didn't pick up Faye, but I sure didn't get no human read off him either. And some of their eyes were way fecked up. Nobody wanted to get near him. She sears plastered against the walls, trying to stay as far out of their way as possible. One of them had a blade to Roseneck. All totin' Uzis, storming in there, not taking shit from nobody. You could tell they were death-walking if anybody even blinked wrong. The girls couldn't stop talking about it. They were pissed, but, well, they were kind of fascinated, too. Should have seen the way those dudes looked. The way Barons looked. Dude, she said reverently, then glanced at me, alarmed. I mean, man, you should have seen it. Don't call me Danielle, I hate that name. There were 8 other beings like Barons out there. I could barely deal with one. Who and what were they? Of all the things I'd learned today, this one rattled me the most. I'd considered him an anomaly. One of a kind. He wasn't. I should have expected the unexpected. 8 others like him. At least 8 others, I amended. Who knew? Maybe he'd only brought a limited number with him. Maybe there were dozens more, and he'd never told me about them. Not one word. Any reservations I might have entertained about the plan I'd been working on since encountering Jane vanished. You're right, Danny, I said. You need a gun. In fact, we need a lot of guns, and I know just where to find them. Chapter 12. It was nearly dawn by the time I parked the school bus in front of the Abbey. I hated giving up the Range Rover, but I needed larger transport. I'd found the bright blue bus, with its dented sides, peeling paint, and lethargic transmission, outside a youth hostel. Danny and I had packed it with crates of guns and Unseelie corpses. I was bone-tired. I'd been up for 24 hours straight, and they'd been crammed full. I didn't expect to get much sleep before moving on with my plans, but I hoped to snatch an hour, at least, of silence, and the opportunity to clear my mind, so I could sort through all that had happened, all I'd learned. The Dragon Lady's library is in the East Wing, Mac, Danny said, as she headed off toward the kitchen. Ain't been used in years. She wrinkled her nose. It's dusty, but cool. I sleep there times they're blaming me for something, or I just don't feel like dealing. Most of the East Wing's empty. I'll hook up with you after I eat. Man, I'll feckin' start. As she sped off, I shook my head and smiled. She'd told me that as long as she kept eating, she could go days without sleep. She was constantly testing her limits. I wondered what I might have been like if I'd grown up knowing what I was. I imagined I would have pressed my limits, too. Probably been a lot more useful than I felt now. I envied her stamina. I had no such gift. Lack of sleep had eroded my patience and left me raw. I was in no shape to make a rousing join-up-with-me she-sears-and-let's-kick-some-fey-ass speech. I rubbed my eyes. I couldn't stretch out on a comfy sofa soon enough. I entered the Abbey through a side door and hurried toward the East Wing. Halfway there, I realized I was being followed. I smiled tightly, but made no move to acknowledge her. I wasn't about to get into an argument with the Grand Mistress in the middle of a corridor, where all the other she-seers could burst from their rooms at the sound of raised voices, and chip in their 2 cents worth, before I was ready to deal with it. If she wanted a fight, she was going to get it on my terms, on my turf. I made a mental note to find out what Danny knew about wards. It would be too perfect if I could block Rowena from the East Wing and secure my own little space in her abbey. Otherwise, I was never going to feel safe. I followed Danny's directions down dimly lit corridors. I was surprised Rowena didn't stick closer to me with my blazing mech halo. Although I refused to turn and acknowledge her, no glare of light competed with mine casting shadows on the stone walls, which meant she couldn't be carrying more than a couple of flashlights. We had no idea how many shades were still in the Abbey. The old woman had balls. I stepped into the library and moved from one lamp to the next, turning them all on. I was pleased to see a plush brocade sofa where I could grab a catnap, as soon as I got rid of Rowena.
"Not now, old woman,"
I tossed over my shoulder coldly. "I need sleep."
"Funny. You didn't seem to need so much a few days ago."
I felt the blood drain from my face. I wasn't ready for this confrontation. I might never be ready for it.
"In fact, sleep was the last thing on your mind,"
he said tightly. He was angry. I could hear it in his voice. What was he angry about? I was the one who'd been through the emotional wringer. My hands curled into fists. My breathing grew shallow. I trusted him no more today than I had 2 months ago.
"Fucking was all you wanted."
It was what I wanted right now, too. I was horrified to realize. His voice worked on me like an aphrodisiac. I was wet and ready. I had been since he began speaking. For 2 months I'd been trapped in a fae-induced sexual frenzy, having constant, incredible sex with him while listening to his voice, smelling his scent. Like one of Pavlov's dogs, I'd been conditioned by repeated stimuli to have a guaranteed response. My body anticipated, greedily expected pleasure in his presence. I inhaled, caught myself straining for the scent of him, forced it back out, and closed my eyes, as if maybe I could hide behind my own lids from an ironic truth. Belaine and Barents had swapped roles. I was no longer sexually vulnerable to the death-by-sex fae prince. Jericho Barents was my poison now. I wanted to punch something, lots of somethings, starting with him.
"Cat got your tongue, and what a lovely tongue it is. I know. It licked every inch of me, repeatedly, for months."
He purred, but there was steel in the velvet. I locked my jaw and turned, bracing myself for the sight of him. It was worse than I expected. I was nearly flattened by erotic images. My hands on his face. Me on his face. Me backing up to him. Me straddling him. My I'm a wanton pink fingernails long and sexy as I wrapped both hands around his big, long, hard... yeah. Well, enough images. I cleared my throat and forced myself to focus on his eyes. It wasn't much better. Barents and I have wordless conversations. And right now he was reminding me, in graphically lush detail, of everything we'd done in that big Sun King bed of his. He'd especially enjoyed the handcuffs. I had as many memories of his tongue as he had of mine. He'd never offered turnabout as fair play, even though I'd asked plenty. I'd never understood why. We'd both known nothing so flimsy could hold whatever he was. Now that I was clear-headed again, I understood. Even if it was only illusory, he was not a man to tolerate dominance. It was all about control with him. He never relinquished it. And that was a huge part of what chafed so badly, burned like salt in an open wound. I'd been completely out of control the entire time we'd spent in that room. He'd seen my most raw, bare, vulnerable self, yet he'd never shown me anything of himself that I hadn't had to rip from his head against his will. He'd never lost control, not once.
"You told me I was your world."
It wasn't me. I was an animal. My heart pounded. My cheeks burned.
"You never wanted it to end."
"Why are you being such a jackass, slamming me in the face with my own humiliation?"
"Humiliation. That's what you call this."
He forced a more detailed reminder on me. I swallowed. Yes, I certainly remembered that. I was out of my mind. I'd never have done it otherwise.
"Really?"
His dark eyes mocked, and in them I was demanding more, telling him I wanted it to always be this way. I remembered what he'd replied, that one day I would wonder if it was possible to hate him more. "I had no awareness, no choice." I searched for words to drive my point home. "It was every bit as much rape as what the Unseelie Princes did to me." His glittering gaze went flat black. opaque as mud. The images died. Beneath his left eye, a tiny muscle contracted, smoothed, contracted again. That minute betrayal was Baron's equivalent of a normal person having a hissy fit.
Rape isn't something...
You walk away from... I cut him off. I know. I get it now. Okay?
You crawl. You were crawling when I found you.
Your point?
You walked away from me, stronger for it.
Point? I gritted. I was tired, impatient, and I wanted the bottom line.
Making sure we're on the same page.
He clipped. His eyes were dangerous. You did what you had to do, right? He inclined his head. It was neither nod nor negation, and it pissed me off. I was sick of non-answers from him. I pressed. You made me capable of walking again the only way you could. It had nothing to do with me. That's what you're saying, right? He stared at me, and I had the feeling our conversation had taken a wrong turn somewhere, that it could have gone a completely different way, but I couldn't think of how it might have or where it had strayed. He brought his head down, completing the nod.
Right.
Then we're on the same page. Same paragraph, same sentence, I snapped.
Same bloody word,
he agreed flatly. I felt like crying and hated myself for it. Why couldn't he have said something nice? Something that wasn't about sex. Something about me. Why had he come in here all stalking and shoving in my face that we'd been in each other's skin? Would it have killed him to show a little kindness, some compassion? Where was the man who'd painted my nails? The one who had papered the room with pictures of Alina and me? The one who had danced with me? Means to an end, that was all it had been for him. The silence lengthened. I searched his eyes. There wasn't a single word to be found in them. Finally, he gave me a faint smile.
Miss Lane,
he said coolly, and those two words spoke volumes. He was offering me formality, distance, a return to the way things had been, as if nothing else had ever passed between us. A facade of civility that made us able to work together when we had to. I'd be a fool not to accept it. Barons, I sealed the deal. Had I ever told this enigmatic, cold man that he was my world? Had he really demanded I say it over and over? Why are you here? What do you want? I was exhausted, and our little run-in was swiftly depleting my last stores of energy.
You might start by thanking me.
There was that dangerous look in his eyes again, as if he felt taken advantage of. He felt taken advantage of. I was the one who'd been at her weakest, not him. For what? For finding something else that was so important to do that it took you all the way from midnight on Samhain till 4 days later to come for me? I'm not going to thank you for saving me for something you failed to save me from to begin with. I'd asked Danny on the way back to the Abbey when he and his men had broken me out. She'd said late in the evening on November 4th. Why? Where had he been, and why not with me? He lifted a shoulder, shrugged. Grace and power in an elegant Armani suit.
You look fine to me. In fact, you're better than fine, aren't you? You walked right through my wards without a word. Didn't even leave a note by the bedside, really.
He mocked.
After all we shared, Miss Lane.
He gave me a wolf smile, all teeth and promise of blood.
But do I get any thanks for doing the impossible and bringing you back from being prior? No. What do I get?
He eyed me coldly.
You steal my guns.
You snooped in my bus, I said indignantly.
I'll snoop anywhere a damned well please, Miss Lane. I'll snoop inside your skin if I feel like it.
You just try, I said, eyes narrowing. He moved forward in one swift, violent lunge, but caught himself and locked down hard. I mirrored the move, without conscious thought at all, as if our bodies were connected by puppet strings. Lunged forward, froze, fisted my hands at my sides. They wanted to touch him. I looked down. His hands were fisted, too. I uncurled my hands and crossed my arms.
He crossed his at exactly the same moment. We both practically flung them down at our sides. We stared at each other. The silence lengthened.
"Why did you take my guns?"
he said finally. His question snapped me fully awake again. I was dangerously tired. "I needed them. Figured it was the least you could give up after all the sex you got," I added with flippancy I didn't feel.
"You think you can steal from me? You're out of control, Rainbow Girl."
"Don't call me that!" She was dead, and if she wasn't, I'd have killed her myself.
"And you know it."
"You're the one who's out of control," I said, just to irritate him.
"I'm never out of control."
"R2?" He broke off and looked away, then disbelievingly.
"Bloody hell. Have you learned nothing?"
"What was I supposed to learn, Barons?" I demanded. My temper, already afraid rope, snapped. "That it's a sucky world out there? That people will take everything from you that matters if you let them? That if you want something, you'd better hurry and get it, because odds are somebody else wants it too. And if they can beat you to it, they will. Or was I supposed to learn that it's not only okay to kill, but sometimes it can be downright fun? That was a real kicker to find inside your head. Want to talk about it? Share a little intimacy with me? No, didn't think so. How about this? The more weapons, knowledge, and power you can get your hands on, any way you can, the better. Lie, cheat, or steal. It all comes out in the wash. Isn't that what you think? That emotion is weakness, and cunning priceless. Wasn't I supposed to become like you? Wasn't that the point?" I was shouting, but I didn't care. I was furious.
"That was never the point,"
he snarled, moving toward me. "Then what was it? What the bloody hell was the point? Tell me there was some kind of point to all this," I snarled back, stepping toward him. We charged each other like bulls. An instant before we collided, I shouted, "Did you help the LM turn me pariah just to make me stronger?" His head snapped back, and he stopped so suddenly that I slammed into him, bounced off, and sprawled on my ass, on the floor, again. He stared down at me, and for a split second I saw a completely unguarded look in his eyes. No, he hadn't. Not only hadn't he, this man, for lack of a better word, who enjoyed killing, was horrified by the thought of it. A terrible tension inside me eased. Breath came more easily. I stayed on the floor, too drained to get back up. There was another of those long, strained silences. I sighed. He took a deep breath, released it.
"I would have given you the guns,"
he said finally. "I should have asked for them," I admitted grudgingly. "But then you probably would have spiked them with something deadly, same way you did the orb, and I'd have gotten blamed for that, too," I couldn't resist adding.
"I didn't spike the orb. I bought it at an auction. Somebody set me up."
He said it with such a complete lack of heat that I almost believed him. There was another long silence. He slid a bag from his shoulder, dropped it at my feet. It was my backpack. "Where'd you get that? I didn't see it in the room when I left, and I hunted for it." I'd wondered where it had gone.
"Found it here at the Abbey while I was waiting for you to get back."
I frowned. "How long have you been here?"
"Since late last night. I spent all day yesterday trying to find you. By the time I tracked you here, you'd left again. Easier to wait for you to come back than waste time tracking you again."
"Doesn't your trusty little brand work?" I rubbed the base of my skull where he'd stamped his mystical tattoo, the one that had failed me when I'd needed it.
"I can sense your general direction, but I can't get a solid lock on you. Haven't been able to since the walls came down. It's working more like a compass than a GPS now that Fey realms have splintered ours."
"IFPs. I call them interdimensional fairy potholes." He smiled faintly.
"Funny girl, aren't you?"
We lapsed into another uncomfortable silence. I looked at him. He looked away. I shrugged and looked away, too. "I wasn't..."
I began.
I didn't...
He began.
How charming.
Belaine cut us off. His voice arrived before he did.
The very portrait of human domestic bliss. She's on the floor. You're towering over her. Did he strike you, Michaela? Say the word and I'll kill him.
It annoyed me to think Belaine might have been hanging around, invisible, eavesdropping on us. I gave him a sharp look when he appeared. My hand slipped instantly inside my coat, searching for my spear, holstered beneath my arm. It was gone. Belaine never let me keep it in his presence, but he always returned it when he left. I hated that he had the power to take my weapon. What if he didn't give it back? What if he decided to keep it for his race? Surely he would have taken the spear and the sword months ago if he'd wanted them. He'd give it back this time, too, I thought coolly. Otherwise, the almighty book detector would tell him to piss off.
As if you could. Perhaps not, but I do enjoy thinking about it. Bring it on, Tinkerbell.
I stood up. Belaine laughed, and the sound was angelic, celestial. Although he no longer affected me sexually, he still packed that otherworldly punch. Regal, larger than life. He would always be too beautiful for words. He was dressed differently than I'd ever seen him, and it suited his golden perfection. Like Baron's, he wore an elegant dark suit, crisp white shirt, and blood-red tie.
Get your own fashion advisor,
Baron's growled.
Maybe I decided I like your style. Maybe you thought if you were more like me,